Hello and welcome to Series 2 of Tell Them, a podcast hosted by Tamasha in partnership with Transmission Roundhouse. My name is Tue and I am the digital producer for Tamasha.
And my name is Samia and I am a producer for Tamasha, and you are tuning in to Episode 3 where we are going to discuss the absence and presence of North African narratives in the arts. So for any new listeners tuning in and any old ones returning, this podcast is a space where global majority movers and shakers reflect and critique work that lies across our cultural spectrum, unpacking connected contemporary issues and dissecting the affairs rooted in our respective cultures.
Reach out to me. If you haven't already, check out last week's episode where the brilliant May Mack spoke to Shiva and Frey on what is it to be queer and Asian in Britain.
In today's episode, I'm going to hand over to our wonderful guest presenter, Rowan. But before I do, I am just going to give you a taste of her work. Rowan Hassani Mokloski is an Algerian-British storyteller. Her work includes her 2019 award-winning sellout one-woman show, My Father the Tantric Monsieur, an autobiographical exploration of sexuality, sexual trauma, and familial relationships. Her second show, Who Murdered My Cat, shines a light on memory, its inconsistencies, and how its power informing our identities. She is currently writing a semi-autobiographical comedy drama TV series, Lights, Camera, Couscous, in which her Algerian mother, who informs so much of her creative work, has the starring role.
2021 saw Rowan chosen for BBC London Voices, participating in Safar Film School for Emerging Arab Filmmakers, as well as having a piece on collective healing published in Dardashi Sign. Rowan's writing finds the heart and humour that runs through tragedy and centres around her curiosity and passion for bringing stories, usually left at the margins, to the centre where they belong. Rowan is an educational facilitator focusing on an anti-oppression pedagogy and accountability. She also works as a script consultant and production challenger. I'm really, really happy to have you in this room to conduct this conversation. So throwing it over to you, giving you the mic to kickstart this conversation on North African work and to introduce our guest for this episode.
Thank you so much. It is an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. And it's so funny hearing your own bio. So I'm going to do the same to you, Nadia. And honestly, knowing you is quite enough to be in awe, but then you see the bio as well, so I'm going to introduce you to everyone. Nadia Nadif is an English, Irish and Moroccan. She grew up in Colchester, Casablanca and Hull, which is where she did her drama degree and trained with National Youth Theatre. Screen includes EastEnders, Comic Relief Sketches, The Secret World of Yarl's Wood, Marshall's Law, which were nominated for Best Sitcom, and Pusher. Stage includes Heroes, Vault Festival nominated for Outstanding New Work. In addition to her career as an actor, singer and voiceover, Nadia runs Untold Arts, a theatre and production company focusing on true stories for marginalised people from history and the present day. She's also an associate with NYT, History Riot, The Factory and Althea Theatre. Oh my God. Welcome, Nadia.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here.
Just awesome. And I think before we get started today, and we're going to be talking about North African stories in theatre, the kind of the absence or presence, giving some shout outs. We're going to be talking about a new show that has just aired on Disney Plus, centering an Algerian story in France. But before we get started, not to be self-indulgent, but how do we know each other?
Well, I was saying this to you just as we were coming in for the podcast, but I wish that I'd known you earlier, especially having seen your wonderful show, and there was a lot in that that I could relate to. I wish we'd been friends as teenagers. Yeah. The reason we know each other is because you were selected for the Safar Film Festival writers course, and then I followed everybody who was selected from that because I was trying to get to know more writers from the community. And then we met because we're both in the British Arab Writers Group as well, which has just been formulated this year, which is amazing.
Yeah. I think being part of the Safar Film School workshop with, we've got to give a massive shout out to Saeed Taji Faruqi, who's brought us all together. Mm. Thank God he's done this. But I just like being in a room with other British Arabs or British North Africans and kind of just being in that space and telling those stories and talking about our work, and now being in our group and getting to meet each other and meeting so many other incredible artists. Like, I absolutely feel the same. I'm like, where were we in our teens? Like, I had no idea anyone else existed.
No.
Yeah. So I think it's really kind of, and it's only happened from 2021, right? So it's only in the last year that I had any idea that, and this network has kind of been built. And Laith El Zubaydi, who's kind of been powerhousing it and getting us all going.
Yeah, and we have to give a couple of other shout outs, I think, as well, who's getting us to connect, because I also saw you on the MENA Arts UK directory as well. So MENA Arts UK was set up in 2020 again in the lockdown, and it's the first kind of community and directory of people who identify as being from Southwest Asian, North African plus backgrounds, who are working creatively in the UK. And it's fantastic. And I have to give a shout out to, well, everybody in the MENA Arts steering group.
Sure.
But I want to give a special one to Leila Alge, who's been doing some great work, who's also a Moroccan actor who's been working on that. And also Sarah Arga, who set up the Arab Film Club and Arab Play Reading Group.
Yeah.
Because again, it's just suddenly we're having all these connections. There wasn't really a home before.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. And I think it's, as you were saying that, and you were kind of saying Southwest Asian, and then MENA, and then Arab, and North Africa, we've got a couple of different titles floating about. And actually, in our WhatsApp group that we have, it came up as a conversation as to who calls themselves an Arab, who gets called an Arab, what's the kind of difference between Arab, North African, do we say MENA, do we say Swana?
I think it is a very complex thing, and I think everybody's got a different relationship to it, and some really interesting points come up, like, do you identify as Arab because it's a language you speak, or there are cultural norms from the Arab culture that you follow? But then we have to remember some communities have historically been oppressed by Arabs, including in North Africa, including with Tamazight region. So it's a kind of thorny subject, I think.
I think it's really complex, and I there's no, just in case anyone's thinking, there are no answers coming up. But it's, I think when I know that my mum, who is Algerian, doesn't call herself an Arab. And when it kind of gets said, she's like, I'm not an Arab. You know, and I think that's because in her heritage and her ancestry, there is indigenous folks from Algeria. Her grandfather was Shunmi, so she doesn't kind of identify as that. She's Algerian, North African. Whereas I think part of why I say it is because it's easier.
Yes, people understand it more than they understand North African, I think.
Like, if ever I say Algeria, people are like, Nigeria, but you're white. And I'm like, well, I didn't say Nigeria, I said Algeria. Or like, people often are like, oh, you're from Albania. And I'm like, no, it's just another country of the day, which is fine. But I think it's like, it really speaks to how kind of invisible it is as a story or a country, or like, it's who it is in the world. But I think also, when I think about, like, you know, when you tick the box as to who you are on a form.
Oh, yes, I have something to say about this. Yeah.
Oh, I'm excited. Because I'm like, I'm either Arab or white other.
So first time I worked with Tamasha, who kindly invited us on to do this podcast, was when I worked with one of their brilliant writers, Lindsay Martinson, on a show at the Park Theatre called Other Please Explain. And it's about that box that you tick. And it was absolutely fascinating to be involved in that. But then in 2020, when, you know, lots of people were becoming a bit more awake, I think, politically and socially. And I suddenly got a lot of theatres that I've ever worked for in my life sending me things, forms to fill out, because they kind of want to prove that they're being diverse. And there was no box for me to tick. And I was just livid. And I was like, do you know what? I've spent 35 years ticking a box that says other. What does that do to me? What does that do to my self-esteem? So I emailed organisations and I said, I am not filling out this form until you add a box that I can tick. And I said, it won't just be me, it'll be other people. Other people are North African, other people are Middle Eastern, Southwest Asian as well. Like, give us a box we can tick.
Well,
and it's important we have that, because otherwise we don't have the statistics to back up the evidence. So for example, in Screen, you're more likely to see an alien in a movie than you are a woman who is Arab.
Wow.
So that's quite a statistic to have. But even like during COVID, and I remember being particularly worried for members of my family, my dad, who's Moroccan, but I couldn't find the stats. There were no stats for us. So I didn't know what his risk was. And that was really scary, like not having any figures. Like, why don't we have a box?
Yeah, why don't we have a box? But like really speaking about the impact of that, that's like you individually, me, like ticking other, like what is that telling us, what's that
exactly.
articulating, but
exactly.
then even when you're thinking about like healthcare stats,
yep.
and then also when we're thinking about theatre and in the arts and being like, yeah. well, you don't exist, so why would we make shows for you, right, if you're not even a number?
Exactly And it's yes, it's a big thing yeah. in healthcare, I think, yeah. As well, particularly kind of in female healthcare, just thinking of, you know, cousins of mine in France, and then family members in the UK, and how differently they're treated when they get gestational diabetes during their pregnancy, which is yeah. a known thing in North Africa, but France realise it a bit more than we do here. So it's, yeah, it's interesting.
God, that is. Ah. Oh. Love it. Thank you for... I like learning. So you've brought in France, and so I want to kind of go straight to talking about Usakine, which is the new four-part series, which is about a French-Algerian student who was murdered by the police on the 6th of December, 1986. And it tells the story of it happening and all the injustice that followed. And I think both I want to kind of, for us to like talk about it, hear what you thought of it as well. But also, I think it will really kind of lead us, like you brought us there to like comparing and looking at, which I think is really important, the way in which North African voices, stories and people exist and are visibilised in France and UK. But what did you think of the show?
I think it's amazing. Yeah, it kind of, perhaps I was a little bit sceptical at first as to what it was going to be like, but you can tell that they've worked with the family over a number of years to create this. And I think also having that distance, I believe one of the writers was 10 when the murder happened. So having that kind of distance to come and bring it up now, it's really, really important. It's very compelling, very moving. And they go into the heart of the human story, which I think is really important, because a lot of stuff that you see, and it's kind of about crime and it's got detectives in it, all those things, and it can sometimes miss that, and this didn't, I felt, and it was really, really nice to see that Algerian family represented, because it's not something that we ever see in the UK, yeah. and it is something that we see in French TV more so, but I felt like this kind of went more in depth. I don't know what you thought.
Yeah, I think the final scene of the first episode where it's confirmed that Malik is dead and they've seen him, all four siblings hug each other and their mother, and she just cries almost silently, and they all cry and hold each other.
Yeah.
And God, even now I feel moved, because it's so rare that you see, I think, either North African and Muslim families depicted to have so much love and warmth. And I think that scene, like, it's so short, it's like the last 20 seconds, I'd say, of the episode, but it was so beautiful and so important when so often the opposite is told.
Yeah.
So it really, like...
And I think that's what drew me in, like, thankfully, alhamdulillah, like, we haven't had those kind of events happen in our family, but I recognised my family watching it. I'm not even Algerian, I'm Moroccan, but I just recognised that culture, that warmth, that humour, and just the kind of the way that it... I loved the scene in the second episode with the dad, and it's a flashback scene, because you get to see a lot of them as children growing up, which is really amazing, because you see the backstory and, you know, the fact that this young man, Malik, he's not just a statistic. He had a whole life before, and he had a whole life that he could have lived without this. And you see the dad and Malik and his sister, and they're out playing, and then they come and see their dad being humiliated by some other white French adults. And suddenly you just kind of see their opinion of their dad slightly change. And I just think it was really interesting as well, like that thing of I'm French, yeah. I'm more French than the French, that kind of thing really pushing through, which is like fascinating.
Yeah, just hearing you say that's kind of really bringing it to my attention. But it is really beautiful how much humanity this story is given, and like seeing, I think those flashbacks is exactly that's what they're doing, that you're seeing this child and what they could have been, what they were, and kind of multifaceted as well. It's not like he's being painted as a sort of saint.
No.
But I think also really speaking to that kind of assimilation. And I think it, like across generations, you see this. I can see it with my family that live in France, as well as my mum here. But, you know, my cousins who are, they're second generation. And when I asked them, I was like, are you French or Algerian? And they're like, French. And I don't know if that's changed in the last couple of years, but it's so different for me. I'm so attached and like desperate to be kind of seen as whole parts of like all of who my heritage are and who I am. But they're like French, like, French.
Do you think that's because there's less of us here?
Yeah, it could be. It could be. I mean, it could be loads of different things. I think the first time I ever felt that being Algerian was, or North African, was a bad thing, or like treated badly off of it, was when I lived in France. And when I would get a taxi home from, I was working in a bar, so I'd like get a taxi home at like 4 a.m. or whatever time it finished, and I would there'd be two conversations, and I say this like not to generalize, but this is but it is all my data that I have, and like however many, like 300 taxis over 2 years or whatever, every time I would get in the taxi, if it was a white French taxi driver, when they would obviously hear that my French accent, like they'd hear I wasn't French, they'd ask me where I was from, and I would say half English, half Algerian, and then the conversation would be over.
Wow.
And then when it was North African or West African, they would ask, and I would say, and then they would, then we'd have a conversation, and they'd say, which parent? And then I would say, my mum. And then it would either go in two ways. Either the conversation would continue and they'd just be like, wow. Or they'd be like, and we're done. which was really interesting. That's the first time I've ever experienced that. Whereas here, it's kind of like, it doesn't matter. Or there might be some curiosity or whatever. Whereas there, I felt like there was a real, it was something. And I remember trying to find a flat, and my uncle came who lived there. And he was like, do not mention our surname. I'll stay outside. You go in on your own, because him and my mum look visibly North African and I don't.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I've never been in a taxi in France. So I have no data to kind of add to that. I suppose just like, maybe it's a difference between dating French men and dating English men. Like when you date a French man, they seem to be a bit more aware of the culture, which is quite nice.
Yeah. I don't have that data either.
I'm not sure. That was the most professional thing for me to say, but there we go.
So any other kind of thoughts on Usakeen, or kind of whether it's like the production of it, the writer's team, or the story being told itself?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I'm not sure that Disney Plus would have commissioned this to be done 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And it's, so I feel like it's quite a timely thing that it's happening now. I don't think this would have been possible 5 years ago. And I think it's really needed because of the misogyny and Islamophobia that the French government did. Can I say that? Can I talk about that?
Oh, man, I'm right behind you.
Yeah. Because I do think it's getting worse. And perhaps, that I don't know why, because I don't know the writers, but perhaps that's why they were so passionate to kind of make it now, to just kind of show in a way how little has changed since the 1980s.
Yeah, I think given like a wider political context of what's existing in France at the moment, is that there has been an out and out lack of apology about the colonization and occupation of North Africa and Algeria specifically.
Yeah.
That the bans on hijab, burqas across Europe and in France, like the European Court of Law have just said that it's fine for any organization and workplace to say that you're not able to wear a hijab. And I know where the justification goes. I have this conversation a lot in my facilitation work, that it's about secularity. And if anyone wants to have a conversation about that, we can talk about it another time. I'm not going to go into like arguing against
but
that.
But essentially, it's not about secularity, is it? It's about controlling women's bodies again.
It's like, about women's bodies, and it's about erasing and oppressing those that practice Islam and their faith in that way.
Mm.
Right? Not everyone.
And trying to stop the visibility of it
exactly.
as well. And the same doesn't happen to men, and it's always, to women.
Yeah. So I think in terms of that existing and like the very close call between the last election, and there was a lot of Islamophobic rhetoric from Marine Le Pen.
Yeah.
And I think it was quite worrying to France how close she got it, like nearly got it.
Yes.
That, I think it's really important. And I'm really surprised that Disney Plus have commissioned this and that it's happened.
I'm delighted.
I mean, really, so delighted. And especially within the, in the first episode, there's also flashbacks to 17th of October, 1961, just a year before Algeria's independence, where over 250 Algerians were drowned in the Seine. And I think there was like an apology in the 90s, but then there's also been like a backtrack on it. And it's just like these, and listen, this exists across marginalized communities and across the world in so many ways, and the ways in which the police are just practice brutality to people that come from marginalized identities. That there's just no accountability and no sorry for it, and there's no repair for it. So I think it is important that the story gets told, as many of these stories that can get told as possible.
Yes. And I think it's really interesting that you have Sarah, who's the sister in Usekeen, that she is in a relationship with a white French policeman.
Yeah, I think it's really important to
it's
kind of
very,
show
very interesting
just how complex
showing that
it is, right?
And showing how many different identities are kind of hidden inside and outside of the family as well. It just kind of gives it a real nuance in it. It just makes it very believable. And again, it's something I really relate to kind of within my own family.
Yeah. Have you read any reviews?
I did have a quick look at the one from the BBC.
Yeah.
Which again was like, how great to see the BBC talking about this show. I wish, I wish it was a little bit more mainstream. I wish you could access it on like BBC and Netflix as well, because not everyone has Disney Plus. But I was really pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a shame there hasn't been more of a shout out about it.
Yeah.
And like more reviews and just people talking about it and saying you should see it. I guess part of that will be that it's not in English.
Possibly, but I think also part of it comes from the fact that it feels more independent as a production than a lot of other things that you have coming out of France.
Yeah.
It does have actors who I know of, definitely from seeing them in Rami or Arab Film Club stuff, but they're not as known as a lot of stuff that comes out in French TV is.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I found it interesting when I was looking up the cast and Googling that they were all called French, even though you know that they're not French by their name and the fact that they were cast.
Yes.
Which is interesting when we're talking about like the representation, the invisibilizing.
Yeah, but I think that comes from, and we have that in the UK as well, that claiming, you know, we'll claim Mo Farah is British as well, because he's, winning all the medals. And it is that thing of, what is a good immigrant, what is a bad immigrant, and how that's kind of viewed. But everybody wants to claim you when you're doing well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I really hear that. So in terms of the show getting a review on the BBC, but not really being reviewed or talked about, not really being spoken about loudly, it does make me think about what we're here to talk about the invisibilization or lack of representation of North African voices and stories. The stories of like North African, Arab, Southwest Asian, Middle Eastern is often falls into terrorist, barbaric, violent, oppressive.
Yeah.
So it is important to see this story, and as you've said, like, give such humanity. Mm. Like, there is a different view of a family that, like, really love each other, mm. that is complex, that is nuanced, that, mm. like, doesn't exist in this 2D role.
Yeah.
But I think, and I think this exists across the board, but I think there is something that I am, and I think this does show it because we have spoken about it, but there is something about still the stories that seem to make it to the top, or the story that seems to get commissioned, are ones of oppression.
Yes.
Trauma.
Yeah.
Collective or individual. Do you think?
Yeah.
The plays that get commissioned, or the series that get commissioned, or the films that get commissioned, that they have to be sort of like sensationalized or exist within trauma or sadness?
I think a lot of the stuff that gets commissioned, unfortunately, does, or maybe it doesn't. I think it's a bit of unconscious bias, to be honest, when you look at who the people commissioning usually are, who are the gatekeepers, and what kind of things are they telling you to do, and who do the funders have to answer to. There's all that kind of hierarchy that is going on. But I do think, unfortunately, there is a lean towards those stories of trauma because there's drama. But what's interesting about, like, I mean, the reason I set up my company is because I was constantly playing, you know, up for the roles of the burka, the bomber, or the belly dancer. And I was like, this doesn't really represent me or my sister or my cousins or, you know, my friends who I now have. Like, so I think there is sometimes a lean towards that. And what's important for me, and especially kind of all the writers that I commissioned and I wanted to work with Untold Arts, like, they have a real humour, and they really, you know, they don't shy away from situations that are real and that are issues that are affecting us all today, but they bring in the humour, they bring in the humanity into it as well. And I think that's when I'm writing, so I've started writing this year, and all the stuff that I'm writing about, it tends to be about Morocco or my Moroccan culture, and there's humour in all of it. Yeah. I cannot not write a comedy. Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. When I think about my two shows, I'm like, there's a lot of tragedy in it, but there's just, there's also got to be a lot of humour and a lot of warmth. Yeah. I just think that's how even any stories I've been told or I hear across the board, that there is so much humour in it.
Yeah.
That's just how, which I think is a human quality, but especially it feels stronger because it's not what we're often seeing or told, so it feels like we have to like shout about that humour a bit more.
Yeah, I think so. I think people just don't expect it.
Yeah, I think of my auntie who wears a hijab, and she's like, has some of the most filthy humour you'll ever hear, and people are always like, oh my god, what?
Well, actually, like, Leila Slimani wrote a brilliant book around this called Sex and Lies, and she interviews all these women in Morocco from all different backgrounds about different taboos, and it's incredible. And reading that, you just see, I think, because discretion is a very big thing in the Moroccan communities. It's like, you can do it, but don't tell the neighbours. Like, it's a little bit like that. And it's, I don't know, sometimes it, like, within the communities, it can be a little bit like, it's more about what other people think rather than worrying about what Allah or God or anyone else may think. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. Thinking about who is reviewing. I mean, where are the North African voices?
I don't know any North African reviewers. Do you?
No, I reviewed a show once.
yourself.
I mean, I did it once, and unfortunately, the people that I reviewed for no longer exist after the pandemic, which was sad. But no, I don't. Shall we try and think about what we can celebrate? Where have we seen ourselves? Where have we seen work? Who can we give a shout out to?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I have to give a shout out to you because I saw your show a few weeks ago.
Who murdered my cat?
No, you're very, very modest, so you didn't. But yeah, who murdered my cat? Like, I saw myself in that show. And I mean, when you're talking about when you're telling your family something about your identity that they don't know about you, and that in a different way, but that really resonated with me as well, and how much sort of courage you have to sort of be yourself sometimes when you are growing up in a mixed heritage household, was just really, really lovely, but also just the kind of, I think just the directness, and with the your mum and your auntie talking about like beauty and stuff, and I kind of like, it's just, yeah, it's just brilliant, because there's just no holding back. Like, I remember being 16 and going on holiday to Morocco to see the family. We'd just go for 3 weeks and we'd just stay with them, and then my Arabic wasn't that great at the time, but I knew that they spent a full 10 minutes discussing very loudly my acne, which you just wouldn't get anywhere else. So I think it's just like when you, I don't know, it's like my heart kind of really lifted watching your show, because I felt seen, even though I'm not you and you're not me, but there was just something about all of it. It just really kind of took me into those places, and it really resonated, so I loved it.
Thank you. I think it's weird writing your own life and putting it on stage, because no one's asked for it, right? I've just decided to do it. But I think the thing that kind of keeps me going, the thing that makes me want to keep on writing stories that are either autobiographical, semi-autobiographical, informed by my life but fictional, wherever it is not the reviews, because they haven't been fabulous. Like, they're always quite like, just like, yeah, she's all right. There are some nice things. I shouldn't say that. There have been some nice lines that we've managed to put on a poster. Excellent. But in general, it's just like, But it's when you say what you've just said, when people from mixed heritage or just from the global majority actually are like, oh my God, I know that you're Algerian, but I'm Ghanaian and my mum says exactly the same thing. Having those conversations afterwards, especially being queer as well, and having people that kind of exist across different identities just coming afterwards and being like, I've never seen that, or that just really connected, or that resonated, is honestly the reason why I tell the stories, because it means more than any possible dream of a five star from someone who doesn't know anything, like hasn't had any experience of that. And it's not to say that their opinion doesn't matter, it's just like there's something that kind of really touches my heart and soul a little bit more.
But it's interesting, isn't it? And like, sort of linking that in with the reviews, like we did when we did the Scar Test, and it transferred to Soho Theatre, and we were there for 3 weeks, and we got chosen as the top five shows written by women for women, and two of them were at Soho Theatre. So one was the Main Space, one was ours, the others were at the National. And it's like, so we got that kind of pick, but then a national newspaper refused to come and review us because they said, oh, we've done political theatre for this month. They'd already done one review of a show that was a bit political, so this one, yes, they wouldn't come to it. And I do think it's hard as well, because certainly when I was starting out and you're doing a lot of fringe theatre and kind of acting and stuff and producing stuff as well, marketing stuff, a lot of reviewers will only come if it's on for 3 weeks. And who can afford that?
Yeah, the gatekeepers of like the wealth that you have to have, or like the funding you have to find to be able to even enter the race, which also puts the pressure on it of like, this is a 3 weeks, I need this review to be able to do something out. And if it doesn't happen, then what? Then I have to go like start all over again. It's a really...
Yeah,
it's tricky. More than tricky. But I think, I think it is a shame. My wish, my prayer for the future, and like how we can continue, like how we can be more visible, how we can have our stories celebrated and watched and connect, is that just because you have a voice that is from a marginalised community, that it doesn't automatically mean it's political or for the people that... Because then we come back to what you're talking about, numbers.
Yeah.
If Algerians, North Africans, Moroccans, Tunisians don't exist, then no one's going to want to put them on, because there's no one that's going to come and buy the ticket.
Whereas, except there are loads of people that would come and buy the tickets.
Yeah.
If that kind of stuff is being put on.
Totally. But also, like, I'm not a 16-year-old from... where's Romeo and Juliet set?
I was going to say Vienna. No, Verona.
Verona. I was like, Venice. I was like, no, that's another one from Verona. But like, I can still enjoy Romeo and Juliet.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? I think it'd be really beautiful to start to see people expanding their mind and really, because I think there's a commerciality to it that's like, well, we've got to have tickets. People are just like, well, just write really good bloody copy.
Exactly.
And people will come no matter what.
Yeah.
But also, it doesn't have to be the best ever, because I think equal rights looks like equal opportunities to fail as well. So I don't know. I just want more space.
But I think it comes from the love and the need to get that work out there, get those stories out there and get people talking, because it does something to someone, doesn't it, when they experience a show or they experience a TV series in that way. And, you know, if it is enhancing your own life and it's making you realise stuff about your own life, like, that's good. So we need to do more of it, and hopefully we will, now that we're starting, I think, to come together more as a community in the UK. I think great things are going to come.
Yeah. And just thinking, like, I know we've spoken about what it is to be invisible, but what is, Camino, what's the, like, impact of seeing an element of your life or your story on stage or on screen?
It's, I think it's quite amazing, because as you just touched on there, sometimes you don't know that it is so relevant to lots of other people from other communities until you make the work and you put it out there, and then people are watching and they're like, oh gosh, I have exactly the same thing, I have exactly the same relationship to these multiple identities, or, you know, I felt the same going through this particular experience as that character, and it reminded me of this. Like, that's kind of what we do it for. And just, like, because I'll shout about it because I'm proud of it, and it started from really humble beginnings. Like Catalina, which was first commissioned to us for us by Oval House, which is now Brixton House. They gave us £500 to make it.
Amazing.
And from that, you know, we're now at a stage where we're in development for a feature film with the BFI.
It's just amazing.
But it's an amazing story, and it's a true story. And, you know, a lot of the work I do with Untold Arts, with History Riot as well, who I'm an associate for, it is about finding those true stories about people in history who, you know, were from similar backgrounds to us, who existed, because we did not all pop out in the 1950s, unfortunately. we've always been here, all, you know, global majority, as much as people who are Caucasian as well. And it is, you have to dig very deep, because historically what is written about people, you know, you go, what's written about men, what's written about women, loads less women. Then when you add on intersectionality, what about disabled women? What about women of colour? What about women who are working class? What about women who are queer? Like, there's less and less and less and less. So you have to work harder to get those stories, and you have to work harder to convince commissioners, but it is worth it.
Can you tell when us, you do it? Like, a little, just a teaser or blurb or something about Catalina, just to get us excited?
I can't say too much, because I have to, you know, I'm under contract with the BFI. but I can say it is a true North African story, set in the past, about characters who you might think are insignificant. You know, they're just in charge of somebody else's, someone rich's bedroom. But actually they hold the key to a huge shift in the whole of European history. So there we go.
I cannot wait. I cannot wait. And I know, just before we, is there anything else that you can tell us that's coming up? Because I know that our friendship is new, so I haven't seen any of your work yet.
Yeah.
But is there anything that you can tell us about or hint, just to... Yeah.
So I was just in a beautiful short film called Ruhi, which means my soul. And it's a lovely, it's based on true story. It's a wonderful Egyptian story about a girl who is half English, half Egyptian, and how she kind of finds her heritage and finds her belonging. That just got screened at the BFI, and it's going to be doing the festival round. So hopefully I can invite you to a screening of that soon. And then I have written a short film called Wavelength. I did it for London South Bank University, and it is about being Irish and Moroccan, and kind of how two sisters differ in their relationships to their identities, and how their relationship with each other is affected by that.
Beautiful.
And it's a comedy, and there's a dance off, so there we go.
Okay, can't wait for that either. Oh, absolutely brilliant. Like, everything you just, like, sisters, Irish, dance off. I'm in. All right. Any last shout outs before I throw back over to you two?
I wanted to shout out to History Riot, just because we're really getting those true stories out of historical figures from the global majority, and that hasn't always happened in places like English Heritage, so it's just really good to get that out and to be serving the communities who live there.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing, amazing.
Oh, can I just also say a shout out to Nadia Fenty, who is an Irish Moroccan writer that I've come across just from Twitter. But she's been sending me some of her scripts and they are absolutely amazing. And she's going to be one to watch. And I cannot wait until her stuff is getting commissioned.
Amazing. Ooh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. We've got an Instagram page for our group, haven't we?
The British Arab Writers Group.
The British Arab Writers Group on Instagram. So yes. If you want to see any more,
follow us. Because also we are going to have an event where we can showcase our work, and we will be inviting those commissioners to that event.
Oh, so yes.
Watch this space.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having us, Nadia. Thank you. Like, what an absolute joy. We just keep coming into each other's lives, and I'm hoping it's for always and ever, because I love talking to you. Over to you two. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. So I'm getting a bit emotional. No one can see us, but just to describe the energy in this room is so positive and warming. I absolutely love it. Honestly, it's been such an amazing conversation to hear. And I think the kickstart of just that celebration of finding each other. And I think that just sort of like goes across all sort of marginalized communities, is that celebration of connecting and creating and making that space and making it larger and larger. So we're kind of like, hey, here we are. So Usagin is available to watch on Disney Plus, and hopefully someone from the BBC is listening and they'll pick it up and that more people can access it. I do have a question for you, Rowan. So Who Murdered My Cat? So that's quite recent. Is that a finished show? Is it going to continue to go on? Are you bringing it back?
Yeah, I am. None of my shows are ever finished, because I'm always reiterating them. Every time it's in front of an audience, I'm like, oh, I've got another story I want to add. And because they're autobiographical as well, I'm like, this makes sense. But I've just last night did my last London Edinburgh preview. I'm taking it to Edinburgh Fringe for 2022, and then hopefully it will either be picked up for rural touring so I can take it around the country, or have a couple of other nights in London. But my dream at the moment, and that I'm trying to get funding to create, is a two-act play with my first show, My Father, the Tantric Masseur, An Interval, and then Who Murdered My Cat. So there'll be some like rewriting and some set, because at the moment it's just me telling stories on a stage. But yeah, so hopefully some more to come.
Someone please fund this woman. Okay, thank you very much for sharing that. And really excited to see Catalina come into fruition, I can say that word. So do keep us updated, and everyone please follow Nadia on her socials so you can find out when that film's coming out. And then Ruhi, the film, which you're saying it's running through the festivals, through the BFI. So please, everyone, check that out when you can. Sadly, we do have to end this episode, but don't worry, we have three more left in the series, and you can catch next week's episode, What Is It to Be Mixed Race in Britain Today, with some really exciting guests joining us. Don't miss out, and follow us on our socials for announcements, and check out our website, tamasha.org.uk, and see if there's anything else that resonates with you. Also, if you liked what you heard, then do go on our Twitter page and hashtag tell them, TELLDEM, and tell us your thoughts.
Thank you so much to Rowan and Nadia for this fruitful and insightful conversation. You guys are amazing. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Thank you, and goodbye.